Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. It's a story of glamour and scandal and political intrigue and a battle for the soul of a nation. Hollywood Exiles from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Macy Rowe, sitting in for Tom Power. Welcome to Q. It's summer, 2001. Smallville, Scrubs, and 6 Feet Under are the big shows on TV, as in actual television. Jeans are low cut, they're flared, and they are worn inexplicably under dresses. On the radio, you've got Destiny's Child, who are still Destiny's Child. Lifehouse's Hanging by a Moment is dominating the charts. You'll hear Train, Dido, and then this. Okay, if you were anyone, anywhere in Canada, in the world, that summer, you rolled down your window and you sang along to that song. Or tried to. Nelly Furtado's Turn Off the Light, from her debut studio album, Whoa, Nelly. Nelly grew up in a Portuguese-Canadian family in Victoria, British Columbia. She played in her school's marching band, she helped her mom clean hotel rooms, and when she got a record deal, Nelly did it on her own terms. She kept her publishing rights. She experimented with scatting and samba when very few pop stars were doing anything like that. She released surprise folk albums and Spanish language hits. She sold out venues around the world and has taken her spot as one of Canada's biggest pop stars. And this Sunday, she'll be hosting and performing at the Juno Awards. As an artist, Nelly has swept a lot of categories at the Junos. She's also hosted them once before, in 2007. So really, this is a bit of a homecoming for Nelly Furtado. And over the course of her 25-year career, a lot of lessons were learned. She told Tom Power all about it when they caught up in the Q studio.
Hi.
Thanks. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
How are you doing? I'm doing all right. Are you doing all right?
Yes. I can say yes.
You can say yes.
Yes. How about you?
I don't know. I can say yes means like, oh, there's something behind it. You're doing good?
Yes. Yes, I'm good. Okay. I'm happy to be creating a lot of music right now.
Yeah, you're making a lot of music at the moment right now, right?
Yeah. I'm back in my artist center of making stuff all the time. And it feels where I'm supposed to be, which is beautiful.
Yeah, I'm happy you're making music again, too.
Thank you.
I want to talk about some of that music in a second. But first, like, congrats on the Juno hosting.
Thank you.
How are you feeling about that?
Thank you. Well, it's an honor and it's exciting, overwhelming, but also it's going to be fun. I like to have fun. I've kind of like learned how to have a lot of fun at my job and at my work. Musicians, we like to be creative and goofy and fun and be in the spotlight, quite frankly. We're hams. So I'm ready.
What do you remember about when you first, because when the first record came out and blew up, you must have gone, that was a big year for you. You went to the Junos there. Do you remember that at all?
Oh my God, yes. I was like really hell-bent on just doing the best possible job I possibly could. I think I might have gone slightly insane doing it.
The hosting or the attendance?
The hosting, because I kind of wanted to like be all things to all people, and I wanted to be funny, and I wanted to look glamorous, and I wanted my performance to be great, and I wanted to fly into the arena on a thing. Like, and we did all the things. Hello, Saskatoon! Very fun. Again, a very creative sort of experience. Very fun.
You're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
Can we go back a little bit? I want to talk about how we got to where we are right now. So for those who don't know, your big break happened here in Toronto. The producer, Gerald Eaton, from the Philosopher Kings, also known as Jarvis Church, saw you at this all-female artist showcase called Honey Jam. What did your life look like back then? Like, you said you worked for an alarm company?
Yeah, I lived in Toronto. I was 17 years old. I graduated high school in Victoria, BC without a plan or a college fund. So I was like, I'll move to Toronto. My sister lives there. So she was already living here. So I came and slept on her sofa. Started like a trip hop band with my friend Talis Newkirk, and we called it Nelstar, which is now still my company name, Nelstar Entertainment Inc. And I saw a poster that said Honey Jam talent show. So I signed up and I went to the audition and I got in. And I performed a Nellstar song called Like. And it's not like I'd be missing you. You've done too many wrongs, many wrongs, wrong. And Gerald was in the crowd, and after my performance, he approached me, and he was with my current manager, Chris Smith, who managed Philosopher Kings at the time. And yeah, they just he asked to make more music with me, so he invited me to the Sony building at the time, and we did a quick demo. Then I went back to Victoria for a year for college. I was literally a teenager. I was 17, so I wasn't quite ready,
yeah.
I will say. I wanted to kind of grow my songwriting a little more. So I went back to college in BC for a year, and then I came back once the next summer, and I worked with him and Brian West on a demo, and that demo is almost 50% of my debut album, Wonelli.
Of Wonelli.
Yeah.
The demo you worked on, yeah, together here in Toronto.
Yeah, in Toronto, on Broadview and Queen, in Brian West's bedroom, like, little setup.
I mean, big record. I was thinking about that record the other day. There's a lot on that record. There's, like, rock on that record. There's, like, scatting on that record.
Yeah.
There's, like, Brazilian samba,
yeah,
on that record.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to the label and... Was it a situation where you went to the label and said, like, hey, this is what I want. These are the kind of this is the kind of music I want to make. And they were saying,
yeah,
oh, no, we want you to make more pop music. Was there any of that?
No, you couldn't stop us. We were so, like, in the sound and just we're like, here, this is what it is. I took my back then. People took very fancy 8x10s at professional things for their bios. But I took my photos at Galleria Mall. RIP. It's almost not going to be there soon. I lived on my aunt's sofa at the time, aunt's sofa first. And I went to Galleria and there was a photo booth there and I took some strip mall photos. I was just coming from a different place. So you either had to buy into the whole package as a record company or not, because I kind of had a chip on my shoulder. I'm not sure why or how. I had a really good manager who trusted in my vision. And of course, the producers, Gerald and Brian, really believed in me, and we believed in our sound we were creating.
I think a lot of people want to talk to you about I'm Like a Bird on Wonelli, but there's a song on that record that I find it on the radio on that record really, really interesting. Because what it sounds like to me is sort of about your feelings about making popular music. You like me till you hold my on the radio. Well, I hate to say, but I've been going solo. You like me till you hold my on the radio. But now I'm just a messing for you, oh no. You like me till you see me on your TV. Well, if you're so low below, then why you watching? You say good things come to those away. I've been waiting a long time for, like, it. Your trepidation about going mainstream. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're 100% right. I think, like, when you're 17 and you grow up listening to a lot of different sounds, like, you don't... You're a little scared of I guess... crossing over in a way. It's all very scary, and I just knew that my identity is kind of, you know, like, was special and I should hang on to that. To stay true to myself. I don't know how to explain it. It's hard to put it into words. I think the world's changed a lot. I think music's changed a lot in the way things are integrated, I guess, with business and like commerce and art merge in a different way than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Back then it was different.
Back then.
So on the radio was about, oh, like I'm making this thing, so let me fly, you know?
Yeah.
Like, for good or bad, let me just make this album and see where it lands, and I don't want to care about, like, the haters or whatnot.
I get that, because I could see at that moment you're coming, it's that moment, hey, there's just so much money in music back then, and there's so much money in pop music back then.
Yeah.
I understand it. People would be sort of pressuring you, like, hey, we need to make this as big a pop as we can possibly get. This needs to be as big a mainstream
I wanted on the radio to be my first single. But I was so happy that Mo Austin, legend, he passed away a couple years ago, but he had worked with Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Amazing acts. You know, he was a legend in the business. And he worked at DreamWorks, my label, and he said, no, I'm Like a Bird will be the first single. And I didn't get it. You know, this cool little girl from Queen Street making trip hop. I was like, no, I want it on the radio to be my first single. It's cooler. They chose I'm Like a Bird, and I was so happy they did, you know, because you don't have the perspective. I think... to be a professional artist in the business, you have to know who you are, but you also have to listen to people who are skilled enough to take advice from and merge those two things. It's a tough skill.
I did read back then, after I'm Like a Bird came out, I read interviews with you from like, you know, a year or so after that. And you were kind of like, it's an interesting thing to have I'm Like a Bird blow up and become such a big song mm-hmm. because it doesn't really sound like anything else on my record.
Yeah, yeah. But then I listened to it today and I go, wow, how cool. It really is like mixing sort of hip hop and pop in an interesting, novel way. I'm like a bird. You know, I heard it last summer at a house party, and it was banging.
Did they know you were at the house party?
Yeah.
And they played I'm Like a Bird?
Yeah, it was my friend's birthday, yeah, at a tattoo parlor.
And
yeah.
what did you think when you heard it?
I thought, this is banging. 22 years later, I was like, wow, I get why people love this, and I'm happy it bangs at a house party, and everybody's singing along, you know?
What I find interesting about that is that, like, it just seems like that time in your life, you were how old? You were like 20?
When I signed my record deal, I had just turned 20.
And you have this great sense of ownership about you. You're like, hey, no, I want this to be my single. Listen, Nelly, like I talk to people. I know you've talked to people. And I've talked to people who were like, hey, when I signed that record label when I was 20, I didn't know what I was doing. I just said yes to everything. You were like, hey, I want to make this kind of music. I'm going to reject the idea of making mainstream pop music. I'm going to make this kind of music. Hey, I want this to be the – oh, I want this song to come out. I don't know if you want to talk about this. I find this really interesting. You're 20 years old. They offer you a big advance, like a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah.
And you say – give me a smaller advance because I want to hold on to my publishing.
Oh, yeah, because you're offered like a publishing deal too. And yeah, we never wanted that. I had really good advice. So I got a healthy like record deal. And to me, you know, I don't know, how much did I make at the Robin Hood Motel cleaning hotel rooms? Probably, hopefully it was pretty good. It was like $12 an hour.
This
I'm
is
not
before
sure.
You yeah, signed. Yeah,
like
yeah.
when I was 17.
Yeah.
My last job... After the alarm company, I went back to chambermaiding
right.
for a year. And I was like 18, like that summer cleaning hotel rooms.
Your mom was there too,
I
right?
think I was like $12 or $13 an hour. So anyway, when I got my record deal, my mom too, yeah. And I was able to just buy clothes I liked. So to me, like, do you know what I mean? Like relatively, I was like, well, I guess I could hang on to my publishing. I really don't need like more money. I can pay my rent and stuff. My music's going to do well. Like I just had that again. I don't know if it's cockiness or confidence, but I guess a healthy dose of both can help. I didn't do a publishing deal, so that was good.
You held on to control of your music.
Yeah, that was a confidence boost, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I talk to artists all the time who didn't. And they regret it, you know, and they feel like, oh, the first two or three records, I'm sure in the long run that was a great idea.
Yeah, it's tough out there. I think, again, like you have to be a leader, right? Or you become a follower, right? So that kind of transcends to everything, doesn't it? So like if like my team, my manager and myself, we're trying to create something new, trying to blaze a new trail. So we had to be all or nothing, right? You had to kind of do that in every area.
You knew you were trying to blaze a new trail? You knew you were trying to do something new with music then?
That's such a good question. I think I was just being myself, you know, my natural tastes, right? You just have to make what you love. And I did genuinely love it. So I think that's a good compass.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if I knew that it was something new. I think it was my natural taste. I think I was just like, I love world music. I love hip hop. I love Britpop. Let's mix it all together. Yay. That's pretty much it. And Portuguese music.
Is there a moment you can point to when you realize it was all starting to take off? Like I've talked to artists before who talk to me about like driving down the, you know, they'll be in LA or they'll be on like the Gardener and they'll turn down the radio and,
yeah.
they'll hear their song. Oh, that's, or they see a billboard. Did you have a moment like that where you're like, oh, this is going to go?
Yes. I was living at the Sears building, wherever that is, down here somewhere. And my apartment had
in Toronto?
No, yeah, my bedroom had no natural light. It was like this cocoon. It was like a cocoon and I had an alarm clock and I woke up one day in the darkness, probably, I don't know, I probably just done some promotional tour or something and had no sleep. I was sleep deprived And my, I think my alarm came on to the radio, and it was, I'm like a bird. Yeah. Yeah. It was cool.
What's your thought in that moment?
It was kind of like, people know about me. Do people know that I exist? This is cool. Like, people I don't know, strangers know about me. That's the different part, I think. When music comes out, you're like, who are these strangers? And then you get to meet them on the road. You get to meet the people that love your music, right? It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. And when you say you're a music...
And back then, it was super immediate. You'd meet them in person.
Yeah, you didn't have to do it over Instagram or TikTok
or anything
like that.
There was like a really like primitive form of blogging back then where like you could read people's opinion about the song, maybe, but it wasn't that powerful.
No, like, you were like, I remember you playing like festivals in Canada. You would just go out to the crowd and people would be...
Lots of meet and greets, lots of meeting fans, lots of that real cool things. You could do a diversity of your fans and all that.
Pretty floored about what she said there about holding on to her licensing rights. That's something other artists, Taylor Swift, I don't know, Wheatus, have had to re-record entire albums to do. Nelly Furtado fought for control of her music from the beginning. I'm AC Rowe, filling in for Tom Power. This is Q. Nelly's control, her involvement at every stage of her music, it's come out in other ways too. She plays a lot of the instruments you hear on her tracks, and she's produced most of her albums. But in the past, Nelly Furtado's name has been left out of production awards. Music producers are kind of like film directors, so that's a bit like if she was an actor, writer, and the director of a film, but didn't get credit for it. Tom asked her about this.
You were also producing your own music. All of your records have had your production credits. Do you feel like you don't get enough credit as a producer in music?
Loaded question.
Don't mean for it to be. Do you know the spirit in which I mean it?
I have a Juno Award for Best Producer, and Track and Field have the same award. Whoa Nelly, my first album, was also nominated for a Grammy for Best Producer. But the rules are is that if you're an artist and you produced your first album, you're not allowed to get the nomination. Only the other producers can get the nomination. I don't know if they changed it.
I didn't know that.
So deep down, I got the Juno for Best Producer, so I knew that I was good at it. But I love collaboration. I love working with other people, but... Yeah, I am a producer.
You are. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun. But I think it's not everything. I think you have to know like when to let other people take the wheel too. Because like I like to just, I try not to let my ego take over. I think that's the danger, right? You just kind of have to know when to lay back and when to step in. But also be brave enough. There was a moment making a record 6 months ago, because I'm making obviously my new album, where I'm just trying all the things I've always wanted to try. And not that I never hold back on trying things, but yeah, it'll become as detailed as like, oh, like I'm actually playing the bass, you know, on Turn Off the Light, like the bass line on the Juno. To like, okay, and maybe directing a musician a little bit and what to play or whatnot, but I don't know. I like to share. It's just my spirit. I like community and fun. And like, I don't care about my contribution as much as I care about the final product.
Yeah.
It has to be good.
Yeah. The
I'm not Stevie Wonder. I can't do it alone.
Yeah. You want,
clearly.
You want to have people around you. People know, you know, people who can help you out. And people who can like join.
Or even play. Like I barely even play guitar on stage anymore, just because I'm so consumed with the singing and dancing that I'm like, I don't want to. I sound bad on guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I still can't believe I'm talking to you. This is still freaking me out. Every now and then.
But I understand what it's like to be a woman and be like, I want people to know that I play an instrument. You know what I mean?
Tell me what you mean.
To be like, I'm a girl on stage and I want people to know I'm playing. Because I have to understand, like, I came into the business 23 years ago. Things were different back then. So you had to really show the parts of you that you wanted people to know about. Like, people, like, I always use the example of Madonna. People have no idea what an incredible songwriter Madonna is. I know for personal reasons I don't have to get into, but she's an incredible songwriter and she doesn't get credit. What's so cool about it is she doesn't really give a shit because she knows she's good. Know what I'm saying?
Mariah Carey too. Mariah Carey.
Mariah Mariah Carey, stop. She's my first love.
But as a songwriter, people don't know that Mariah Carey, people think that there's like this big machine of dudes behind writing fantasy.
Yeah.
Mariah Carey is one of the best earning, greatest pop songwriters of all time. That's the spirit in which I asked the producer question, is that I talk to women producers all the time who say that like women producers, A, there's not a lot of them in this country right now. And oftentimes artists like yourself who did produce don't get the credit for it.
I always get credit.
That's what, like, I mean by the song.
You know, I think it's that we don't care as much because we have confidence in what we do. So it's like we don't need that because we're also in front of the camera. We're the ones singing the songs. We're the ones doing the thing.
Yeah.
We're the stars of the music videos. So we don't need everybody to know, like, oh, did you know I produced this idea, or it was my idea to bring this in, or like, do you know what I mean? Because there's situations where it's not like that.
Can you tell me the story? Speaking of producers, you're working with Timbaland. You've been working with him for a long time. Promiscuous, Say It Right. And then Maneater.
See, there's a situation where I don't produce a whole lot if Timbaland's there.
Yeah, fair enough. What's the story where that studio caught on fire when you were recording Maneater? Can you tell me that? I've heard that story before. Is that a true story?
Yes. Yes. Are you kidding? Okay. At the time, Timbaland was working with Danger, which is another producer, okay? So they had these... Pardon my pun, but fire beats.
Hello.
And it was day one, and all the magic happens on day one. If you want to make something good, it's going to happen on day one.
Yeah.
It might happen later, but day one's really special with anybody new because it's new cells, new energy, right? It's like new energy coming together for the first time. So anyways, sorry, getting hot. So we're in the studio. We're in Miami. I get into the room. The first thing he plays me, I think, is the beat for the song called Glow, which is on my album Loose. Make me We do that song. Then he pulls up the beat for Maneater. And it's like, you know? And it's like, wow. So it's full blast at the Hit Factory. Everybody look at me. Oh. I walk in the door, you start screaming. Oh. Come on, and the speaker starts smoking. And a little flame comes out. And we're like, whoa, did that just happen? And we were actually, I'm not lying, they went and replaced the speaker because they had a great staff that just could get you anything. They came and replaced the speaker right away. And we actually decided not to pull that track up again that night. We said, we'll get back to that tomorrow. I think we were a little scared.
Scared of it.
Yes, it's so weird. It sounds weird. But we were spooked.
What do we know what caused? Do we know?
No, I think the volume burnt the rubber or I don't know.
Yeah.
We still... I have witnesses.
Can I say that's like a testament to like a song is going to... Because that Maneater became a gigantic song.
It's still really fun to play.
I mean...
It gets more and more fun.
That is a testament to... I mean, that could be a testament to the song being so big, so good. It lit the studio on fire.
Some kind of voodoo that day.
I think so.
A bit of Nelly Furtado's Maneater. Before that, you heard part one of Tom Power's conversation with Nelly Furtado. I'm AC Rowe, filling in. If Nelly Furtado seemed to disappear for a little bit there was a reason for that. She, quite intentionally, stepped out of the spotlight. Coming up, why she made that call, and how another Canadian megastar helped her plan her comeback. You can take your bets on who that was right now. Q, we'll be back in a moment.
Yeah. Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Macy Rowe, filling in for Tom Power. You're listening to Q. That's new music from Nelly Furtado. That's her song, Eat Your Man, released just last year. Not to be confused with her other big hit, Man Eater. She's a woman who likes callbacks. Did you catch them? I heard at least two. Today, we're listening to Tom's conversation with Nelly. She's hosting the Juno Awards this Sunday. If you haven't heard new music from Nelly Furtado for a while, that was on purpose. She made the call to step out of the spotlight. She went to work at a record store in Toronto, took some dance classes. But now she's back in studio making new music. Tom asked her about it, why she stepped away, and which Canadian artist came knocking to get her back on stage and into the studio again.
Can you tell me the story of, because I saw the video of you at Drake's big show out in history. So Drake, Canadian rapper, says, Drake, Toronto-based artist.
Who's that?
He puts together this night at History in Toronto, featuring like people who are very meaningful to him in the history of Canadian music, you know, legends, legends of Canadian hip hop. I'm watching all these videos on Instagram and all that stuff, really excited about it. Nelly Furtado shows up. Promiscuous and I'm Like a Bird, I think.
Yeah, he really wanted I'm Like a Bird, and I was fighting him on it. I was like, really? Why don't we do Promiscuous? He's like, no, trust me, you're going to tear the house down.
Can you tell me the whole story? So like,
yeah, sure. He asked me to do this thing, and I hadn't performed in years.
Call? So
I
was
super hesitant. No, we have a mutual friend. I met him at the video at Casa Loma he did with Future. Mm-hmm. I had some friends there and some friends that were wanted to play me some stuff and et cetera, et cetera. So we met there, and then he invited me to sing, and I didn't want to do it. It took some convincing. So when he came out on stage and he's like, it took some convincing to get this woman out of the house. It's true. I was at the zoo with my kids that day, and I didn't confirm that I was really going to do it till like a couple hours before. And then I just somehow whipped it together, called hair, makeup, got a dress, and then, yeah, showed up. And it was pretty life-changing in that moment, because I forgot that, like, with life you grow, and just because you took 5 years off doesn't mean you have nothing new to offer after 5 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like if you go and live your life and just live your life as best you can and follow your passions and wherever your heart is, mm-hmm. it's okay. You'll still be yourself on the other side. You'll still have your talents and you'll still have the things you're good at. But mm-hmm. it was like that night at History, I walked off the stage and I thought to myself, wow, I've done a lot of work on myself. I've grown a lot as a human in these 5 years. These 5 years have definitely been really valuable. Think of all of that life I can now put back into my art and creativity and music. This is going to be great. So that night, the narrative kind of switched for me into this is going to be great.
And now, and that I'm sure that's what leads you to make this new music that you're making right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really fun. So fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait for people to hear it.
You're in one of those places you were telling me about earlier where you're feeling creative. You're feeling like,
oh, I can't stop. Yeah, I'm constantly making like playlists and constantly thinking of the next song I'm going to record. Like I see it now as it's not ending, you know? It's just like this is what I just keep doing. Just keep making more and more music, and I just keep doing. That's what I do for fun.
That, I mean, that feels like it's in the lyrics to the Keep Going Up song, one of the newest songs
you
have.
Oh, yeah.
I'm no longer settling. I'm upgrading. My new life's better than the old one. I've been on new energy. It's contagious. That feels like what you're telling me today, Nelly.
working on my games lately. I've been loving myself from the daily. Had to cut some people off and we're draining. I'm no longer settling, I'm upgrading. Hey, hey.
Thank you. We had so much fun making that. It was a real meditation for us. It was a real like healing experience for the three of us to kind of come back 20 years later and say, hey, we're still got each other's back. You know, this is fun.
You, I hope one of the things you took away from that Drake show that night is just how much you mean to a lot of us.
Aww.
I think, you know, just you were a real, you've been a really big part of our lives in music. And I can't tell you how many people I talked to in this country who got into making music and producing music or singing music because of those early records in Canada and seeing them on Much Music and then watching what you did after that, showing that you could reinvent yourself, that you can, there was no limit to what you could do if you're from Canada. It's really beautiful, and I hope you can take that in sometimes. Thanks for being here, Nelly.
You're so sweet. Thank you.
Say it right. From the one, the only, Nelly Furtado. She'll be hosting and performing at the 53rd Annual Juno Awards. They're happening this Sunday at the Scotiabank Centre in Halifax. You can watch them on TV or streaming across Canada at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 Atlantic. For more, head on over to cbcmusic.ca/junos. And check out our other episode today. You can hear Tom's conversation with Alexandra Strelitzky. She's up for Album of the Year at this year's Junos. She has this incredible story about quitting her job after a Canadian director discovered her music. You can check that out wherever you're listening to this podcast. I'm AC Rowe, filling in for Tom Power. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.